Welcome to the Singular Links podcast. This is Tony Parrish, a.k.a. Slinker. This episode features Chapter 6 of the audiobook Singular Links. The episode explores transformation by extension, the process of taking observations from one field and extending them to other fields to reveal new insights. The episode chronicles the theoretical physicist Jeffrey West and shows how the mathematical rules governing the biology of animals also dictate the life cycles of cities and corporations and other man-made networks. Rather than focusing on how systems are reduced or expanded, this episode looks at the universal scaling laws that connect all complex systems through the efficiency of their internal networks. I hope you enjoy Transformation by Extension. Transformation by Extension. There was a time back in the 1990s where everywhere the theoretical physicist Jeffrey West looked, he saw fractions. Not just any fractions, but the same ones. 3/4 and its complement, 1/4. These pervasive fractions showed how quickly animals grew relative to their mass and how their metabolic rates changed at each size interval. He noticed the same fractions related to the rates at which hearts beat, lungs consume oxygen, and even the growth of trees and plants. From tiny bacteria to giant elephants, these ratios kept coming up again and again. West wondered, why are these specific fractions so prevalent across the living world? He saw examples of food consumption of animals, including humans, and knew that larger animals used energy more efficiently than smaller ones. Imagine a woman and her dog are out for a walk. The dog weighs 60 pounds and the woman weighs 120 pounds. Since the woman weighs twice as much as the dog and has twice as many cells, you might assume she would need twice as many calories each day to maintain her basal metabolic rate, right? But she doesn't. As West observed, she only needs about 3/4 more calories than her dog. Now imagine the woman and her dog spot a deer. That deer weighs 240 pounds, twice as heavy as the woman and 4 times as heavy as the dog. It turns out the deer only needs about 3/4 more food than the woman to maintain its basal metabolic rate. It is 4 times as heavy as the dog, but only needs about 3 times as many calories. West found that you could continue identifying heavier and heavier animals. The Siberian tiger is 8 times as heavy as the dog. The California sea lion is 16 times as heavy as the dog. And for each doubling of weight, the animal would only need 3/4 more food. These ratios hold for ever larger animals all the way up to the blue whale and also for ever smaller animals down to the tiny mouse. West wasn't the first to notice these things. In the 1930s, the Swiss agricultural biologist Max Kleiber formulated Kleiber's Law, which asserts that an animal's metabolic rate is proportional to its mass raised to the power of 3/4. The law applied to tiny animals and giant animals and all the animals in between. West also observed there's a relationship between an animal's size and the amount of sleep it needs. An elephant only needs a few hours of sleep per day, while a fruit bat may sleep for 20 hours. West identified many such relationships between size and other attributes. Larger animals use less energy per pound than smaller ones. Larger animals have slower heart rates per pound. Larger animals tend to grow at a slower pace, but then live longer. Larger animals have more efficient networks to carry nutrients and oxygen throughout their bodies. In all these examples, West observed, nature has awarded a size premium to the larger animals, and the ratios of 3/4 and 1/4 kept recurring. If you plotted the various ratios on a graph, with the horizontal axis representing the size of an animal and the vertical axis representing calories or sleep or any of the animal's other attributes, you might expect to see a hive of dots scattered across the graph with a general upward sloping trend. In other words, you might expect a general trend with lots of variability among the menagerie of animals, each of which evolved independently over millions of years, from mice to cats to dogs to horses to deer to tigers to sea lions to whales. What you do see is remarkably tidy. What you see is a straight line of animals lined up in an orderly row with surprisingly little variation above or below the trend line. It looks like a biblical painting of all the animals marching two by two into Noah's Ark. This shows an impressive consistency in the scaling ratios across the entire animal kingdom. Those same fractions, 3/4 and 1/4, describe lots of other relationships too. They describe the mass of an animal relative to its rate of oxygen consumption, blood flow, and other biological functions. West began to wonder whether these same patterns could be found beyond biology. Could the regularities he observed in metabolism, growth, and energy efficiency also appear in other complex systems? Could they exist in man-made systems as well? What he discovered was that, just as animals enjoy a size premium, so do cities. If you double the population of a city, you more than double its economic output per capita. You also more than double its innovation output as measured by the number of patents created per capita. The list continues. You more than double its number of social interactions and the efficiency of its infrastructure as measured by the length of its roads and electrical lines relative to its population. Again, if you graph different sized cities relative to these other attributes, they line up neatly along the scaling line with surprisingly little variation. What about companies? Do they also enjoy a size premium? They sure do. On average, if you have two companies, one with twice as many employees as the other, the larger one will create more than twice as many assets per capita and generate more than twice as much income. From the smallest family company all the way up to Amazon and Walmart, with more than 1 million employees each, these scaling relationships of companies follow a similar orderly scaling law. Economists use the term economies of scale, or increasing returns to scale, to describe these relationships. Recall also from the chapter about Kaufman's adjacent possible, the term superlinear scaling, or in the case of needing fewer and fewer resources as they grow, sublinear scaling. In his book, Scale, The Universal Laws of Growth, Innovation, Sustainability, and the Pace of Life in Organisms, Cities, Economies, and Companies, West wondered if there could be any analogous hidden order underlying all of this complexity and diversity. Could there conceivably be a few simple rules that all organisms obey, indeed all complex systems, from plants and animals to cities and companies? The existence of the similarities suggests that there is, indeed, a common framework within all these different complex dynamics. West found a remarkable example of this size-resource relationship in the heartbeats of mammals. Larger animals tend to live longer than smaller animals, but smaller animals have faster heartbeats. Since small animals with fast heartbeats have short lives, and large animals with slow heartbeats have long lives, it occurred to West to ask the question, do animals of vastly different sizes have the same number of heartbeats in their lifetimes? Amazingly, the answer to this question is yes. Regardless of size, the hearts of most animals beat roughly 1.5 billion times during their lifetimes on average. That's the essence of Jeffrey West's link. He extended a simple observation, the relationship between animal size and its metabolic activities, across specific scales and systems, until he uncovered something general. He didn't stop at a single insight. He pushed it, extending it from biology to urban planning, economics, corporate strategy, and elsewhere. Why aren't there any horse-sized dogs? In a parallel study alongside his research into how complex systems scale, West began wondering what limits restrict those same complex systems and prevent them from scaling indefinitely. His research showed that there are unambiguous advantages to being large. Larger cities, companies, and organisms operate more efficiently than their smaller equivalents, and their relative ratios are remarkably predictable. Larger animals need less food per pound of body mass. Their hearts beat less frequently. They live longer and sleep less than smaller animals. Larger cities require less infrastructure per capita, such as roads, sewers, and water lines, though they generate more social interactions, more innovation, and more economic productivity than smaller cities. The size premium also applies to larger companies, which produce more assets, more net income, and more profits per employee than smaller companies. Since there are advantages to being large, West wondered, why don't animals grow to be the size of mountains? Why aren't there any horse-sized dogs? As it turns out, the answer to the question is pertinent to more than just pet lovers and eccentrics. It has relevance for entrepreneurs, corporate strategists, social scientists, epidemiologists, and others interested in understanding how things grow and why they stop growing. West discovered the answer is related to resource availability. This includes both external resources such as consumable calories for animals and internal resources such as the animal's ability to transport nutrients throughout its body. It's easy to see how external resource availability would constrain growth. You see this all the time in the natural world. Animals that live in harsh conditions with scarce food supplies tend to be smaller, on average, than their cousins, who live in more prosperous areas. And yet, if you took your adorable Shar Pei puppy and placed her in the most resource-rich environment with unlimited healthy meals, tasty snacks, toys, and cuddles, she would only grow to the size dictated by her species, dog, and her breed, Shar Pei. Her growth would be limited by her biology, not her environment. So what is it about biology that limits size? In the grand scheme of things, dogs and horses are mostly similar. They are warm-blooded mammals with similar bone structures, four legs, hearts that pump blood, and lungs that pump oxygen. Yet despite their similarities, you won't see cowboys saddled up on dogs riding across the prairies or airline passengers toting tiny horses in their carry-on luggage. It helps to look at metabolic processes, or metabolic rates, which govern the amount of energy needed to keep the organism alive. For the average 60-pound dog, that's about 800 calories per day, and for a 1,000-pound horse, that's about 15,000 calories. Dogs, horses, and humans all digest their food and use their circulatory systems to carry nutrients, oxygen, and hormones to all parts of their bodies and remove waste products like carbon dioxide. But you already knew that. But here's the kicker. Although the horse and dog need different amounts of calories, pump different volumes of blood through their systems, and have different sized hearts, the size of their capillaries is almost exactly the same. In fact, the capillaries of most animals, including humans, range between 5 and 10 micrometers in diameter, just large enough for blood cells to pass through in single file. The giant elephant is 2 to 3 million times heavier than the tiny shrew, but they both have capillaries of roughly the same size. So, how do larger animals with larger hearts pump more blood to their capillaries than smaller animals and do it more efficiently? They accomplish this with marvelously efficient fractal geometry, a tree-like pattern that exhibits self-similarity from the macro to the micro. As animals grow, their circulatory systems add more branch levels, with each branch itself adding more sub-branches, all the while ensuring that the tiniest branch is just large enough to allow the passage of blood cells in single file. The circulatory system maintains maximum efficiency by keeping the ratio of diameter to branching angle constant. That's nature's Six Sigma. Looking at it another way, for an animal to grow larger, it must find a way to use energy more efficiently than it does when it's smaller. It does so by using the fractal patterns of its circulatory system. If the efficiency of its energy usage stops improving as the animal gets larger, the animal stops growing. This is an important lesson for corporate strategists because the same rules apply. If you're trying to double the size of your company, you have to find a way to operate more efficiently. To become twice as large, you have to operate with less than twice as many resources. The good news is that if you can do this successfully, you should be able to also more than double your profits, and you can potentially keep growing from there. It's the same with cities. If you are a city planner and you anticipate that your city will double in population over the next 10 years, for instance, you have to find ways to grow while using less than twice as many resources. Again, if you can do this successfully, you can expect to more than double your GDP, more than double the amount of innovation your city produces, and other metrics that West tracked on average. And you can potentially keep growing. Companies and cities that can successfully make the size-resource trade-off have a tremendous amount of growth potential. Those that cannot make the trade-off successfully, when their inputs outpace their outputs, will soon reach a ceiling on their growth potential. For companies, that translates to limited profitability, limited market share, staff burnout, and turnover. For cities, that means more traffic, longer commutes, more crime, and strained infrastructure. West found that animals are somewhat more efficient in their scaling activities than cities or companies. And that explains those recurring fractions that West identified throughout nature. Animals achieve an efficiency ratio of roughly 1/4 or 25%. In other words, they require 3/4 more calories or 75% to achieve each 100% size increase. Companies and cities achieve an efficiency ratio of about 15%. Meaning they need 85% more resources for each doubling of size. Regardless of the specific ratios, the important benchmark is whether these entities can more than double their size with each doubling of resources, called superlinear scaling, or fall short of doubling their size for each doubling of resources, sublinear scaling. In the corporate world, the key metric is the marginal cost of growth. That is, the cost of adding each new unit of growth. If the cost of growth is less than 1, the company can keep growing. If the cost of growth is greater than 1, the company will be constrained by its natural size limit, and it will hit a growth ceiling. To answer the question about the dog, it will not grow to be the size of a horse because it reaches the limits of its availability to distribute resources efficiently throughout its body. So what's the lesson? One lesson for corporate planners is that most companies have to be willing to change processes in order to grow. They can't just hire more employees, add more office space, and continue doing what they've done historically, only doing it on a larger scale. That would be like feeding the dog more food, expecting it to keep growing. Well, companies could try that, and many companies do, but they soon hit their limits. After a certain point, adding more resources to the company without improving efficiencies results in deteriorating profitability. Companies have to find ways to become more efficient if they want to keep growing. What gets them from 0% market share to 1% may not be what gets them to 2% to 3% to 4% market share. Decoding the scaling laws of life and business. Just as Claude Shannon illustrated transformation by reduction and Chuck Close by expansion, West's work embodies what I call transformation by extension. He demonstrates that innovation can emerge when established truths in one field are extended and applied to another. In this way, what proves effective in one context may also succeed in another, and what you discover there can often be brought back here in new and illuminating ways. A small insight into one relationship can evolve into a broader understanding of many others. That's the essence of West's idea. Patterns in one domain can often reveal principles that resonate across many. That is West's singular link. West's curiosity caused him to look for applications of Kleiber's law beyond the animal kingdom. He found there are similar laws, including those with the same power fractions, that govern the attributes of cities, including GDP, wages, population density, infrastructure, patents, crime, and disease. If you told him the size of your city, he could predict its attributes. You could use West's information like a reference table to determine if your city was above average or below average, and by how much. Very useful. The same predictable scaling laws can serve as benchmarks for the corporate world, too. You could look at the number of employees in your company and be able to identify the company's expected growth rate, profitability, likelihood of going out of business, and other characteristics. Also very helpful. What else can we learn from these reappearing fractions? In West's work with scientists Brian Enquist and James Brown, not the godfather of soul, James Brown, he developed a theory to explain the quarter power scaling phenomenon in nature. This was one of their singular links, a unifying theory that's applicable across domains. As they argued, the internal networks that distribute resources throughout an animal's body are structured with space-filling efficiencies that lead to predictable scaling relationships. When an animal grows larger, occupying more and more three-dimensional space, its internal networks grow in observance of what they describe as a fourth dimension, a fractal dimension. That is why the quarter power scaling laws are so widespread. Wait a minute. We've used the term fractal a couple of times already, but we haven't defined it. A fractal is a complex geometrical shape that exhibits self-similarity. It is a shape that repeats itself at different scales. Fractals can be seen throughout the physical world. A tree is a fractal, with each branch appearing like a small version of the tree, and each leaf comprised of the same tree-like structure. A cauliflower is a fractal, with each bulb appearing to be a smaller version of the whole. Rivers exhibit fractal properties, and so do shorelines, snowflakes, ice crystals, and lightning bolts. The songs of birds and the chirps of insects follow fractal-like rhythms, as does the crackling of fire and the crashing of ocean waves. So why would West have the audacity to propose that fractals be considered their own separate dimension of space? After all, isn't the physical size of the cauliflower just that, the three-dimensional size of the cauliflower? What's the deal with this fourth dimension? If you were hired to measure the surface area of the cauliflower, and you had the right tools, and made sure you were careful enough, couldn't you just take your measurements, submit your answer, and collect your paycheck? These are very good questions. Well, as it turns out, the surface of the cauliflower cannot, in fact, be measured exactly. That's true even if you had incredibly precise tools. The surface of the cauliflower can only be measured to within a certain degree of approximation. The measurement you get is related to the size of the ruler you use to take the measurements. Let me explain. Recall from the lessons on Chuck Close and George Seurat that the size of the paintbrush defines the quality of the painting. Larger paintbrushes create cruder images. Smaller paintbrushes can create more refined images. Theoretically, a painter could work with finer and finer brushes until each brush was comprised of just a single strand of sable fur. Now, I don't want to take us down a fractal rabbit hole, but I do want to take a moment to explain the measurement dilemma. This concept is crucial for our understanding of scaling laws, in particular, and for making connections by extension in general. Let's say you wanted to measure the coastline of North Carolina. You could start by taking a photo from a satellite, calculate the scale, measure the orderly line that you see, and come up with your answer. The simplified answer is 301 miles, which is the straight line measurement of the state across the Atlantic Ocean. A more detailed measurement of the many twists and turns of the coast, estuaries, and tidal areas would yield a measurement of roughly 3,375 miles. Big difference. Of course, you could get even more granular by taking many photos from a low-flying plane or drone. These pictures would give you more detail than the single satellite photo, and you would see there were smaller variations in the coastline that you didn't detect in the satellite photo. These variations would add some area to your initial calculation. You could repeat the process again, this time walking the shoreline itself, observing more details that you didn't see in the photos, and adding more area to your measurement. In fact, this would show that in addition to twisting and turning in two-dimensional space, as seen from your aerial photos, north, south, east, and west, the coastline also rises and falls in three-dimensional space. And this, too, adds area to your number. It soon becomes pretty clear, as you look more and more closely, right down to the individual sandbars and rocks, pebbles and twigs and roots that collectively comprise the coastline, the calculated surface area keeps growing. You have now entered the fractal dimension. And this same dimension also applies to the cauliflower. Normally, when you think about spatial dimensions, to the extent that you think about spatial dimensions at all, you think about reassuringly solid objects like billiard balls, Rubik's cubes, mountains, planets, or whatever. These things have three dimensions that are well understood. If you are inclined towards abstract thinking, and perhaps if you know a little bit about physics, and especially if you ever saw episodes of Carl Sagan's Cosmos series from the 1980s, and if you didn't, you should stop reading this book right now and go binge-watch that series, you may be familiar with the concept of space-time. Einstein developed the theoretical and mathematical frameworks for space-time, which essentially categorize time as a coordinate that is intertwined with the three coordinates of space: length, width, and height. What West and his team proposed was related, but different. They proposed that there is space within three-dimensional space, a fourth physical dimension. And this is the reason that the number four appears so pervasively in the power laws that explain the world around us. So, Professor, what's the lesson? Well, different people may come away with different lessons. Some may focus on the fractal aspect and recognize the futility of trying to measure things with precision. Since your measurement accuracy is dependent on the accuracy of your ruler, you have to be practical and settle for some level of approximation. Don't let perfect be the enemy of good. Some may see a metaphorical lesson, that nature demonstrates structures that work, structures that have been developed over millions of years of evolution, and you would do well to emulate them. In other words, you don't have to reinvent the wheel. Others may focus on the efficiency lesson, that you have to optimize resources relative to your size if you want to keep growing. That idea resonates for me, and it hints at the real lesson, but it still seems incomplete. For me, the real lesson is that if you're going to build something that you will want to grow, then consider how its growth potential relates to the way you build it. Whether it's a biological system, a company, a city, a software platform, or a social movement, the structure you build determines how efficiently resources flow through it, and therefore how much it can grow. There's a reason the e-commerce company Etsy's market cap is $6 billion and Amazon's market cap is $2 trillion. Etsy specializes in handmade, vintage, and custom products for a niche market of customers that appreciate niche offerings. Even though Amazon also distributes many niche products, the majority of its business relates to mass-produced products for mass-market customers. No matter how large Etsy grows, it will be constrained by some inherent growth inhibitors that don't constrain Amazon. Not that there's anything wrong with being small. There isn't. It's just that small things cannot grow large if their internal structures aren't scalable. To grow large, you need a structure designed for large growth. West's universal scaling laws provide a striking example of transformation by extension, establishing truisms in one domain and applying them to others. He revealed a profound truth. The same mathematical patterns that shape life also govern the institutions we build. From cells to cities, organisms to organizations, growth follows rules, and those rules can be extended across contexts. Extension starts with a single observation and stretches it across systems, disciplines, and scales. What began as a curious detail about calorie consumption became a universal insight into how life and society expand, thrive, and eventually reach their limits. The singular link West forged was the recognition that the self-repeating, efficiency-driven growth of biological systems is a universal principle that can explain the scaling laws of non-biological systems. While Shannon achieved transformation by atomizing information into bits and reconstructing them, and Close achieved transformation by aggregating dots into cohesive portraits, West achieved transformation by generalizing observations across seemingly separate domains. He showed that the secret to growth lies in architecture, not just resources. One lesson is that the underlying order of complex systems is mathematically tidy, challenging the notion that evolution and social growth are purely chaotic. Another is that structure determines potential. Large-scale growth requires systems designed for superlinear scaling, continuously finding ways to operate more efficiently as they expand. We talked about Claude Shannon and reduction through mathematics, about Chuck Close and expansion through painting, and about Jeffrey West and extension through biology. Next, let's turn our attention to another Sultan of Slink, Bruce Lee, and his lesson about refraction through combat. That's a wrap. Thanks for tuning in. If you'd like to explore more ideas like this, you can find much, much more at singularlinks.com. If you're feeling frisky, tell your friends and family, in-laws and outlaws. Music was provided by the Slink Tones. Until next time, connect the unconnected, create the unexpected.